If you love all things gardening, why not join us at our Spring Fair from the 3rd to the 5th of May at Bewley in Hampshire? You'll find everything you need to kickstart the season. Find out more at bbcgardenersworldfair.com. See you there!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It takes a lot of hard work to make it look easy. This Mother's Day, Duluth Trading Co. can help you give her something that keeps up. Whether you prefer to shop online or in-store, Duluth has a motherload of gear, goods, and gifts to keep her comfortable and capable, no matter what needs doing. With Duluth's problem-solving details and legendary durability to boot, you'll finally be mom's favorite again. Check out DuluthTrading.com for all your Mother's Day gifting needs.
Hello, and welcome to the BBC Gardeners World magazine podcast, brought to you by the team here at the magazine. Join us as we chat all things gardening with the nation's favourite experts.
Do you love winter, despite the cold, the rain and the short days? Well, over the next 40 minutes or so, we're going to help you find the beauty in the season and in your garden at this time of year. I'm Catherine Mansley, digital editor at Gardeners World magazine, and I'm here with esteemed garden designer and writer James Alexander Sinclair. In his monthly column for our magazine, We Love, James has been extolling the virtues of each season and its plants for 15 years now, finding amusing and evocative ways to describe the highlights of the month. So if there's anyone who can help us to learn to love winter, it's James. So, James, people often talk about the worst things about winter, but what do you think are some of the best things about winter?
I think I've been sold a pup here to a certain extent. It's, yeah, okay, James, come and talk about winter. So why do I have to do winter? Why can't I do summer and spring or something optimistic like that? No, it's fine. Somebody's got to do winter. Who should we draw? Oh, let's get James. He'll come in and do that. Okay, fine. I know where I stand now. So, right, winter. winter is inevitable. I think in order to have spring or summer, or, you know, the dawn chorus and butterflies and bees twiddling around the place doing their things, we have to have winter. Yes, we could all go off to some hot place, but I don't think that would be very nice. I think it's quite nice to have this sort of stretch of cold where everything calms down a bit. And I know this may sound counterintuitive, but one of the best things about winter is not having to garden. Actually, there is no guilt. There is no guilt at all. And it's absolutely fine to sit on the sofa and watch 7 episodes of Game of Thrones if you really want to, or whatever it is, rather than actually having to go out there and do it, because there is nothing you can do. And there are times, I'm basically a weekend gardener. During the week, I'm gardening, but I'm gardening for other people. And at home, which is obviously the most important, it's the weekend. So, you know, you wake up on a Saturday and it's pouring with rain or it's miserable. And actually, if I go out there and stand all over flower beds, I get to do more harm than good. So, result, back to bed. Basically. No, I mean, there are obviously, you know, there's grays. Not every day in winter is horrible. Not every day in winter is cold. Not every day in winter is wet and miserable. Some days in winter are just even better than the best days in summer. I mean, we had a few days last winter where the frost is just extraordinary and perfect. And we don't often get days like that. And the sky is this sort of, you know, mineral water clarity, and it's blue, and you walk out and the cold is sort of, it's almost embracing you. And you know you've got enough clothes on, it's fine. You have a woolly hat and you're warm in there and you can feel the cold about you. You can see your breath coming out and you can just walk and you can hear the crunch of your footsteps across frozen grass. And just watching the ice and the light coming through it and all of those sort of things, that's almost a better experience than waking up on Midsummer Day and going out barefoot. It's not really comparable, it's a different thing, but it can be as emotional, it can be as sensual as going out in the summers. But those days are few and far between.
Are there any winter gardening activities that you do relish?
Yes, no, there are. Okay, what are the main winter gardening activities? Basically cutting things back.
Yep, pruning.
You know, things need to do it. There used to be, when I first started gardening, which was a terrifyingly long time ago, probably when you were a baby in nappies, there was something called the autumn cleanup.
Yes.
Which is basically go and cut everything down immediately. Cut it all down. We look at this brownness.
And then lock the garden and walk away.
Correct, exactly. And you cut everything there. You look at this brownness for the rest of the winter, and that's it. And we don't do that anymore.
No, it's changed.
And we allow things to senesce and to die elegantly. And some of them do die elegantly, and some of them don't. And so there's this process of cutting things back, which is quite cathartic and quite cleansing. But we do it gently and we do it slowly. And the general rule is basically you look at it, and if it looks horrible, cut it down. And if it doesn't, then it's fine. So there are certain things that die badly. Daylilies, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Horrible, mushy, mush. Yuck. There's no advantage to them. There are other things that die like a poet in a garret. So they die with a certain long-suffering elegance.
Phlomis.
Phlomis do that. Opium poppies, Papaver somniferum do that. There's skeletons of those sort of things. Most of the grasses do that. There's an awful lot of stuff there. Rose hips, everything like this. They all die with elegance. And so if it's doing that, then allow it to do that in its own time. So this cutback goes on for really quite a long time. I have one particular garden which is a lot of perennials in sort of quite large beds. In gravel, we cut things back. And then in about February time, it's you're sort of bored of beige by that stage of life. You think, okay, enough of this. And so it then gets strimmed. Go in there with a strimmer, strim the whole thing down, and then rake that off. And then you have nothing. And it's quite a nice moment when there's nothing there. But we don't want it to start in October as it used to be.
No.
This is like February time when you're doing that, because we know what happens in February as well, is that February is the time when everything begins to sort of move over, and it's not just about the dying, it's about the rebirth, and the snowdrops start, and the Iris reticulata start, and you have to clear space for them to be actually seen and be visible. So there is this sort of movement. So winter is not a static time. Every day is different. I think probably the worst time is the time between Christmas and New Year. Really, it's this general horribleness where nothing is happening in between the chaos of Christmas and the disappointment of New Year, basically, is what it is. And so there's this area in between, which I heard described as the merineum, actually, today.
Oh. So you should be feeling merry, but instead you're just feeling overfull of cold streets.
Yeah, it's just, God, really? That's a pretty, pretty bad moment. You need to find something to do at that point. But after that, when you see your first snowdrop, you think, yes! And people get very excited and think, oh, gosh, it's spring. And I want you to say, it's not spring!
Spring is still a long way off.
Spring is a long way. Just because there's, one snowdrop does not a summer make. You know, all of that kind of thing. But people get very overexcited about it. And there's sort of, spring, early spring, pre-spring. No such thing as pre-spring. It's not that. It is still winter. So it's winter and it's there. So the question you asked me quite a long time ago is what good things are there about garden jobs in the winter, which is, yes, cutting back is one thing. Because cutting back also contributes to one of the best things about gardening, which is making compost. And my compost heaps, I'm very proud of my compost heaps, as I think everybody is proud of their compost heaps if it's all working and doing what it's supposed to do. Do you have handsome compost heaps, Catherine?
I have compost heaps. They're not handsome, though. Mine are a bit neglected, and then I suspect yours are handsome and turned and well-maintained.
No, they're quite OCD, my compost heaps, which is not like me at all. But the compost heaps, I have three that we made that is, meter cubes and all this, and one gets turned into the next one and then that one's the other one. All of this kind
of thing.
The perfect
system.
When it works, it is really quite something. And so obviously what you need to do is you need to feed your compost heap. So what are you going to feed your compost heap? You're going to feed it with stuff that you've actually cut down from the garden. I bought a shredder the other day. I have an electric shredder of great loveliness, or it was a great loveliness, but I bought it. I was shredding all the stems. I mean, it was in this gone winter, so all the last bits, the woody bits, were going into it. And then I just got a little bit overexcited, and I put a thing in it that was like
too big,
and it's still stuck in it. I tried to work out how to get it out. I think if I wait long enough, it'll rot and fall out, but I don't think that's quite going to work. It's a bit of bay tree that's got stuck in it, so I'm going to have to unbolt it or get somebody to do that in order to rescue my shredder. So yes, you're cutting stuff down, and that means that you're making compost. Making compost is a very good winter job because it's warming It's exercising and all of those sort of things. And one of the things about gardening in the winter is that you have to be constantly looking for something to reward yourself. You have to look at, you know, say, oh, yeah, I've turned the compost heap. I'm definitely entitled to a cup of tea and a piece of cake now.
Definitely.
Absolutely, definitely. Or a small square of fudge or something like that. Or that slightly sticky wine gum that I've just found in my jacket pocket that was probably there last year. So I can have that. Now I've turned a compost heap, or I've filled up this, or I've moved that, or I've done this kind of thing. So there's quite a lot of stuff that one can do in the winter that you obviously can't do in the summer. One of the most important things about gardening generally is that gardening is not all about work. Gardening is also about actually appreciating what you've done and looking and sitting and watching and enjoying and all of these sort of things. You know, we get carried away by, you know, Monty saying things to do this weekend. It's not an order; it's an option, which is sort of an important thing to remember. So in the wintertime as well, it's important to find time to stop and to sort of look. And although it's not as comfortable as sitting on a deck chair, it's still worth just sort of pausing and looking at things because winter is not a time of barrenness. There are still things. There are things. Some of the most delicious things flower in winter. Some of the best smells you get in winter. There's always something there. Even if there's nothing, even if it's the skeleton of a plant with a robin in it, or it's the skeleton of a plant without a robin in it, or it's a leafless tree, or it's all of these kind of things. There's always something there to have and to enjoy.
What are some of the loveliest plants that you enjoy in winter?
I have a hammer melis called Reuben.
Oh,
witch
hazel.
Which is a sort of red witch hazel, which is, you know, heavenly. And up until this year, we couldn't see it from the kitchen because when I moved into my garden, which the garden I'm in at the moment, which was, oh gosh, 7 years ago now, I suppose, there was nothing in it but laurels. It was real, sort of, you know, nothing to do except just look at the laurels. And I took out most of them on day one, basically,
yeah.
Pretty much. But there was one that I left. And eventually I thought, why did I leave that one? And I left it because it sort of opens up a view to a next door neighbor and, you know, various things like that. And I thought, okay, so this is it. I'm going to take that one out. Take it out. Now, from the kitchen, I can see the hammer melis, which I knew was going to happen,
Absolutely. Of course.
It was not an accident.
Perfect. That's textbook garden design, isn't it? Have your winter interest visible from indoors
Correct.
The house.
What's the point of having it over there? It's like planting, you know, the very heavily scented winter flowering honeysuckles and the sarcococcus, the Christmas box and all those sort of things. And you walk around someone's garden and it's right at the back. It's over there. So why on earth have you planted something there? Plant it by the path. Plant it so that every time you go to the garage, every time you go to the post box, every time you leave the house, which you don't want to do very much because it's winter, you pass something that gives you that sort of connection to the fact that nature is not all asleep. Some of it is awake through that. So plant it close by. So yes, the witch hazel, the Christmas box, the chimonanthus, the winter sweet, you know, and all of these things that have these really, really intense scents at that time of year. And it becomes almost more intense because of the gin clear quality of the air and the fact that it just moves in the cold much better than it does in the warm. So there are lots of plants going on there. Some of them are, you know, obvious, big showstoppy things that have a scent and have a flower, and other things are just there because they're quiet and they're quite nice and they're just pootling along. And a lot of it is a lot of the evergreen that you've had as the background to your summer stuff is now says, right, okay, all this fly-by-night summer stuff, that's gone on holiday. That's disappeared. That's now disappeared back into the ground. Therefore, it is of no interest to us whatsoever. It is now our turn to shine in a quiet and distinguished way. So you're the evergreen viburnums and the yews and the, you know, all of that sort of stuff and the box and the evergreen grasses and everything like that is now there. And you can see it, and that's holding the interest, and it's holding the skeleton of the garden. One of the things that, however, okay, there's always a however to all of these things. One of the things about people, you know, it's not just, it's year-round interest. People
Yes.
want year-round. It's quite tricky to do year-round interest, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because if you do year-round interest, then it has to be at the expense of something else.
Yeah.
So when do you want, Catherine, when do you want your garden to look its nicest?
When you're going to be in it the most.
When you're going to be in it. How often are you going to be in your garden in February?
You know, twice running to the bins.
Yes, exactly. very good at giving the right answer. So you want it to be looking good from, what should we say? You're an outdoorsy kind of person. You want it to be looking good from late March, early April till about November-ish.
Yeah. And that's when you're going to be planting plants and doing stuff in it as well. So then, yeah, winter just gets totally forgotten.
So don't plan your garden just so there's a lot of evergreen in the winter, because it will look boring in the summer. So you have a little bit, you have a skeleton, you have an outline, but only if it actually is going to do something later on. It's like there's a rather lovely viburnum, which is called Cinnamomifolium, which is an evergreen. So it's got a good leaf to it. In the springtime, it's got a white flower to it. So it's got these two things going on. So evergreen is fine, provided it's going to perform on another occasion. Because one of the things that we have to remember is that not all of us have enormous gardens, you know. And we live in a part of the world where you can grow an enormous number of plants, and we can't fit them all in.
No
matter how many you buy, you can't fit them all in. And so everyone that you have has to work. So yes, evergreen, it needs to do something else. It can't just be evergreen. It has to have some shape or some architecture or some flower or all those sort of things. But the wintertime is when the evergreens begin to sort of shine and say, right, this is our moment, and we're here, and we're here to show you that not everything is beige, and not everything is dying, and not everything is leafy. But just don't have too much of it.
No, I think evergreens have a kind of real reputation for just being really dull and dreary and heavy and, you know, shrubbery. No,
which is very unfair.
Do you think they need a rebrand?
Because they've always been there. The whole idea of the rebrand, it's like somebody was, it was on the television on Chelsea Flower Show. It's the relaunch of the shrub. He said, what do you mean the relaunch of the shrub? They've been there longer than anything else. He said, oh no, but nobody's interested. Of course they're interested in shrubs. You can't really have a garden without them.
No.
I mean, otherwise you're having a garden. Okay, so James's theory of planting. Do you like James's theory of planting?
Probably I definitely want to hear.
Winter.
No, I definitely want to hear James's theory of planting.
James's theory of planting is basically, if you're planting anything, a garden, a border, or whatever it is, there are two things. Okay, there is architecture. So that's your hedges, that's your trees, that's your shrubs. It's all of the stuff that creates this sort of skeleton, this framework upon which your garden is built. And then there is fluff. And fluff is everything else. And that's all there is just those two things. So you have your architecture, and this is where in the wintertime your architecture shows up and you see where your hedge lines are. And it doesn't necessarily have to be evergreen, but it has to have some sort of firmness to it. And then the rest of it, the bulbs, the perennials, the annuals, the grasses, the roses, all of it's fluff. And where would we be without fluff, Catherine? Where would we be?
I know. But so how do you, in winter, if all you've got is architecture, how do you make that not boring? You've got no fluff.
Well, A, you draw the curtains to stay inside for quite a lot. I mean, it's very short days.
Yes.
Bear that in mind. Yeah, you know?
You don't have to look at it for so long.
You don't have to look at it for so long. And there are days when you think, actually, hang it. You can't really be doing it. But there are days when you can. So what are the things to make you want to get out of your house in the winter? This is the question, really, isn't it? And a lot of it is just the fact that you're outside. And we all know that being outside is one of the nicest things in the world, and that you can only sit on a sofa for so many hours a day. And although there's something comforting about getting dark at 4 o'clock and drawing the curtains, thinking, oh gosh, now I can just hang around. I don't have to feel obliged to go out and garden. The idea of just being outside is actually really important, just for us as human beings, for us as gardeners particularly, because this is what we're sort of used to. So quite a lot of the excitement and the fluff and the rest is not necessarily in your garden. It's go out into the wider countryside, see what's going on out there. Go and visit gardens in winter is actually rather a lovely thing to do. Just go and walk in the countryside to go and see what's happening and watch the birds fly around the place. And watch the pigeons eat the last of the haws off the hedges and forage for the last remaining crab apples, and all of those kind of things are worth doing. In your garden, you'll find that an awful lot of the good things that are happening are quite small. We spoke about it first. The first bulbs is that's a very exciting moment. Is the first snowdrops keep coming through, but a snowdrop is not a snowdrop because there's not very much going on. A snowdrop is really exciting when it is a green tip. 1 millimeter high. Okay, so you don't have to wait for the whole flowery, droopy, you know, galanthophily kind of thing going on. You just it's just that. You think, look, there's something growing.
The anticipation.
It's the anticipation of it. And it's, oh gosh, it's January when the first snowdrops are showing. And when you say they're showing, it is literally 1 millimetre, maybe 2 millimetres of green stuff that's coming on. And then you get a coating of snow and it disappears again or something happens. So there is that. There's the beginning of bulbs. You look very closely at stuff. There are a number of ways of looking at gardens in that you can stand at your kitchen window with a cup of tea and buy a radiator and look at the whole garden. Or else you can go out and look at a border, or else you can look at a combination. You look at one plant, you look at one part of one plant. One of the other signs of spring that you look very carefully for is just the swelling of a rosebud. So it's just, you know, it's just suddenly the shoots are there. And you know, not that long ago, it was just a stick. And now it's just getting very slightly bigger and bigger and bigger. And there's this little red thing. It's a little bit like a pimple, maybe. Maybe that's not the most romantic way of looking at it. But it's just beginning. And you think, there's spring. It's just sitting on the side of that plant, just waiting to be released. And it's like the baby bulb. So you're looking at little tiny things. It doesn't even have to be something that's green. It's maybe just the way that the leaves, which you've sort of left or you put in a leaf mold pile, just begin to decay and they turn back to this sort of tracery and they've been dug over and turned over by the blackbirds or the robins looking for worms underneath it. It's all of these little tiny weeny things in the way, like I said right at the beginning, when those days when the frost comes and you see the way that the tracery of ice has just taken up this thing or it's got onto a cobweb. You know, all of these little tiny things. So in the winter, it's not about big, expansive, extravagant gestures. It's about little small things and taking your comfort where you can find it. But most of all, it's just about being there. It's about being in your garden. It's a little bit like being in your garden. It's mildly embarrassing. Being with your garden when it's got no clothes on. standing there saying, I am naked yet glorious. Because then the spring comes and the summer comes and all that disappears. But one should exult in the naked outlines of one's garden.
And you mentioned going to visit other gardens. Are there any gardens that you have that are particular favourites to visit in winter?
Yes, actually. Interestingly, there's a National Trust garden called Anglesey Abbey. Have you been there?
I've never been, but
it's a sort of classic garden. And I've been there once. I went there because one of the things that I've done is I've made a lot of very silly films with two friends of mine called Joe Swift and Cleve West, who are both garden designers.
Yes.
And Joe Swift, you will know, he's the sort of bald ginger one from Gardener's World. And we decided we were going to make a film about the winter garden. So we went to Anglesey Abbey, and I'd never been there before. And it's in Cambridgeshire. And it's just an extraordinary garden. And we got it when it was snowing.
Oh, wow.
And there was snow on the ground. And it was one of those days and the sky was blue and the snow was there. And we made this very silly film where we pretended that Joe was making a film and Cleve and I were basically inquisitive tourists who kept interrupting his filming. And you walk through this garden and it's all the things that are in the winter on the winter garden hit list, which is basically stems.
Yeah.
So the dogwoods in orange and red and green and all of those sort of things, and all the winter flowering shrubs like the hammer menace, like we spoke about earlier, and the sarcococcus and all of these things, and the willows, the pretensis, and they're all coloured stems and look amazing against the blue. And then you walk along this bit and you suddenly come around the corner and there's this unexpected surprise. Because one of the most exciting things about a garden is an unexpected surprise. Even if you've seen it before, it's still an unexpected surprise. And you come around the corner and there's this it's almost like a sort of sacred glade of birch trees. And somebody has scrubbed the trunks of these trees. Definitely. Somebody rubbed them and polished them.
Cleaned them down.
And there's just this gleaming bone white against the blue sky again and the sort of slightly darker background. And it's almost as if you're expecting a druidical human sacrifice in the middle of it. It's just sort of one of those sort of magical places. So that's a very, very good garden. There are a number of good winter gardens you're looking for. I'll tell you exactly where the other one is that's really, again, on the subject of stems and things, is the RHS Garden at Hyde Hall, which is in Essex. And what they have is that through these borders, they have willows And instead of cutting them back, what they do is they tie them together and they turn them into these rather extraordinary shapes. So all of these, they're basically woven, the coloured branches are woven together in these sort of slightly spectral, slightly weird, slightly spooky, sort of slightly ghostly shapes that are there. So there's these sort of red swirls, like a sort of trumpet that goes up into the air, another one that comes down like a dragon emerging from a burrow, you know, all of these sort of things. And so they do really, really clever. There's a good winter garden there. And then they've got these willows that actually wriggle their way. In fact, all of the RHS gardens have got really good winter gardens. Wisley's got fantastic. All the coloured stems and the Rubus, is it Tibetianus or Cockburnianus? One of those ones, Cockburnianus, which is these white, ghostly bramble stems.
Yeah, really spiky.
Exactly, against the dogwoods and the willows as well. There's a wonderful one. And then there's a lovely one, a Harlowcar up by Harrogate as well. So those are good winter gardens.
People, when they think about plants of winter interest, people can get a bit fed up with the same plants get trotted out by us gardening writers. Oh, you know, that again. Is it that it's gardening writers just coming out with the same boring plants, or are our expectations of winter plants wrong?
I don't think we can blame gardening writers entirely for this. gardening writers are not the creators. We don't make plants. We don't invent them. You know, the fact that it is winter, if winter was as extravagant as summer, then it wouldn't, summer would not be so exciting, basically. So winter is a different feeling to it. And yes, we are limited with the amount of things that we can write about. I think I've probably written about Sarcococcus in We Love at least 10 times. You know, it's this whole thing is, okay, it's January. What the hell do I love about January? And do I love... I can't love that because I loved that last year.
And the one like I'm that... I'm going to love that in February.
I love the year before. It's like remembering which girlfriend is in which place. all of that kind of thing. There is a more limited palette of plants. But the fact that they're limited does not make them any lesser. Yes, they are familiars, and yes, they are things. But the other thing about it is that to you and I, they're familiar. Mm. To people who've just got their first garden, or to people who have just moved house and are looking for something, it's not. It's something extraordinary. It's something that they feel that they've discovered. Everybody, you know, there's no such thing as a new thing under the sun, really, is there? But it's new to somebody somewhere. So the fact that we're talking about and describing, you know, something that is as delicious and as fabulous and as wonderful as a Sarcococca. To you, you're saying, yeah, James, okay, we've done that one already. Can we think of something else? We know we can't. We only have this limited number. We can't invent. If somebody comes up with a new plant, whoop-de-doo, we will laud it, we will praise it, we will be terribly nice to it, and we will be greatly relieved that there's something else to write about. But we can't force it. And the whole essence of, okay, why, Catherine? Why are the flowers on winter plants smaller than they are on summer plants?
Is it so they don't get blown away?
Yeah, pretty much. Why would you want to have a big blousy thing that's then just going to get rained on, get sleeted on, get snowed upon, get winded? You want something that's sort of small and can sort of survive this sort of thing. It's like a sort of, you know, it's like an Arctic fox. It's sort of small and it can hide behind a rock rather than something that's enormous and giraffe size. So they are small. They are intense in order to protect themselves. Otherwise, they just get run ragged by everything. It's like the hazels are quite fun. It's a winter thing, and you know, you've got these very extravagant catkins hanging down for hazels, which is the male flowers, and they're waiting to be wind pollinated. So they're saying we have a big flower because we want to be battered by the wind. We like that. This is how we work. Is the fact that the wind blows and our pollen gets spread around the place, and obviously as you know, the reason why they do that in the winter is because they're wind pollinated. If they did it when the leaves came out, then they wouldn't get very far, basically, and they'd just be
stuck in
pollinating their closest
their
friends
leaves.
And relations, which is not the point. They want to go further, go out and find somebody new and somebody exciting. But the female flowers, tiny, 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 tiny little things. You barely even notice them at all. There's all these sort of dangly blokes running around the place with their catkins. But the female flowers are just little weensy things that are just there to catch the pollen. But they're really, really delicate. It's just about two or three little tiny reddish petals stuck on the side of it. It's worth sort of looking at it. And I like doing it. If you're walking through a woodland with children in the winter, you say, look, you see that? And you see this little tiny one there. That's how it may lead to embarrassing questions about the birds and the bees, but then you pass them to their parents and say, go and ask mummy about that one. and how it gets. But yes, they're small in order to protect themselves. And what's nice about it is there is a contrast. And this is the most important thing about, and why we are so lucky to have seasons. Would it not be hideous to live in Los Angeles? Apologies to all listeners from Los Angeles.
You think we'd get bored if we just had glorious sunshine
all year?
I went
to Los Angeles for 2 weeks. I was bored. I thought, God, this is a hideous place. It really is. It's horrible. Again, apologies to listeners from Los Angeles. And one of the things is because it is predictable. And the fact that we live in a place where there are these four distinct seasons, because we're sort of people, but also mostly because we're gardeners, and you know that this is going to lead into that, and we have to go through the winter in order to get to the spring, and we have to go through the spring in order to get to the summer, and then the summer will pass all too fast, and then we get into the early autumn, which is the best time of the year of all.
Oh.
And then we get into the late autumn, and then we go back into the winter again. But it's one thing to the other. It means that we're never bored. We always know that there is something else. And it also leads to us as gardeners tending to wish our lives away to a certain extent. And do you find yourself at sort of July looking at the border and thinking, oh, next year I could do this and that and that. We could move that around and cut that down. Oh, I wish it was next year. But you can't make it any faster. So you basically have to sort of go through it and enjoy the seasons. I can't remember what your question was now.
Nor can I. Is that the answer to winter then? It's to spend it planning spring and summer? And
Yes, but not exclusively. You're looking forward, but you have to appreciate the day. You know, I know it sounds hideously sort of new age.
Hideously like something that would come out of Los Angeles.
Yes, exactly. But it is, it's the idea of living in the moment and, you know, all that kind of thing. And in that, yes, it's wet and it's miserable and horrible, but it's not going to be wet and miserable and horrible forever. And actually, there's quite nice things about being wet and miserable and horrible. There are other things that will sort of show. You know, it's like I said right at the beginning, if it's a miserable day, then it's an excuse to say and stay in bed, which is a good thing, really. And maybe that's what you need to do at that moment. The rain will have stopped and it'll be windy and you can go for a windy walk. Isn't that nice to go for a windy walk where you're leaning into the wind and it's blowing you back again, and you can watch the trees wave around the place. One of the things, when I was a young landscaper many years ago, I used to do a certain amount of tree surgery, or at least I wasn't a very good tree surgeon, but I liked to climb trees.
What did you do wrong?
Well, it was I just got too enthusiastic, and I liked climbing the tree more than I actually liked doing the surgery, I think probably. And I liked to stand at the tops of trees when the wind got strong. And it's like being in the crow's nest of a galleon on the Spanish Main, and you're being blown backwards and forwards the whole tree, and you think, this is a tree that is 50 feet high, and I'm 50 feet in the air, and I'm holding on to this, and the whole thing, the wind is blowing the whole thing backwards and forwards, and I'm just relying on the fact that this tree is not going to snap and plummet me to the ground. I don't encourage all of your readers to climb trees, but, you know, if they feel like it, then it's actually rather a fabulous and a wonderful thing to do, is to just feel the strength of the tree. And just blow backwards and forwards on it. And then the next day, so we had a rainy day, we've had a windy day. Next time we have a snowy day. And that's, you know, that's a good excuse to go and throw snowballs at your next door neighbour or whatever else you choose to do, and be quite childish about the whole thing. And then the next day it's grey. Because most days, to be perfectly honest, are grey, aren't they?
In winter.
And it's grey, but we can still garden. It's relatively dry underfoot, or the ground has got some hardness to it, which means that we can actually go out and turn the compost heap, or rake something up, or cut something back, or look at what's going on, or clean the greenhouse. I know when garden writers are getting desperate in the winter, and you see it on social media as well, is that suddenly somebody is doing an entire film about cleaning their tools. You know, okay, we got to that stage. There's absolutely nothing growing. The weather's horrible. So what we're going to do is we're going to do a whole 10-minute thing about sharpening my secateurs and oiling my trowel.
Very important
it
job.
It is really, very, very, I'm sure, absolutely really, really important, but I think I'd still rather go back to bed or go and do something, go and read a book or something along those lines. But yes, these are the things. There's always something to get you out of the house and get you out of the hair of your significant other or whatever it is that needs to be done. Go in the garden, clean your tools, tidy the greenhouse. I mean, I've been promising myself for the last 4 years, I know what I'll do. I just need to rearrange my shed.
Mm.
And, you know, we all have an unarranged shed somewhere. And so I have a shed which I'm fond of, and it's nice, but it's just pretty chaotic. It's one of those things that when we first moved in there, I sort of built this shed and then put everything in it. Yeah. But I haven't actually put it in any order. And I look at pictures of other people's sheds, where everything is in lines and all the tools have sort of outlines to them. On the wall. And they're all cleaned and oiled and they don't have the mud of ages stuck to the side of their shovels. And there's a little jar which has got 2-inch screws in it and another little
stuck
jar.
Stuck to the underside of the shelf.
Yeah, all of that kind of thing. And there's another little jar that's got vine eyes 3 inches tall. And then there's this apocryphal tale, I think I've been told by 2 people about oh yes, I found something in my grandfather's shed. There was a jar and had a label on it that said bits of string too small to be of any use. You know, it's that sort of thing. And so that, go and do that. Go and do stuff like this. It's all part of gardening, and it's that sort of preparation. It's getting everything ready for when the moment comes, because to a certain extent we're under starter's orders from mid February.
Yeah,
probably. I mean, we're not there, and we have full starts, because in March there will be the odd sunny day, and everybody will say, oh, it's this moment, quick, where is my halter top?
Run outside. Where are my
hot pants?
Go and say, mow the lawn.
Just don't. I mean, mow the lawn, fine, you can do that. But for God's sake, don't sow anything. I mean, that's just a really, really silly idea. So that's a full start, and the whistle gets blown, you get to go back to the beginning again, because it's going to get cold again, and it's just not going to be there. And this whole idea of winter spring, which people talk about, or splinter,
wishful thinking.
I call it splinter, because it's all going to end in tears in the end. So you're under starter's orders from them, but you're not really racing until April, and so you've got quite a long time to sort of fill in. So there are things that need to be. There's things as things begin to grow. Yes, of course, put your staking in. That's quite an important thing. Perennial plants. A lot of them will need staking.
Yes.
And what will have happened is that the year before, you will have forgotten to stake some things.
Always.
Until it was too late.
Yeah, and they
flopped over and you thought, oh, no, it's fine, I can do it. So you go in there and you do this sort of Heath Robinson thing with 4 bamboos and quite a lot of string. And nobody's happy at all in any way, shape or form. And you think, oh. That's just, and then you end up cutting it back. It's all over there. It just looks hideous and horrible. So you think, I know, next year, I will put some stakes up there, and I can do it. You know, I'll either go and buy some metal ones and put them in the right place, and I'll get some hazel sticks from down the road. We've got a place down the road which sells quite a lot of bean sticks and hazel coppicing, and all of that kind of stuff. So you say, right, I'm going to do this, and the time to do that is before anything's growing. So do it in March. Do it in my last house. We live next door to a wood. We're very lucky, and I would go and harvest hazel from that gently through the winter, and I would start making these sort of nests of hazel sticks or birch sticks or whatever happens to be lying around in about March, so that everything was there. And you would look at it, and it would just look like a sort of messy stick yard for a bit, but within 2 or 3 weeks, things are beginning to come up and grow, and you just need to do it early. Do it early. It's a really, really important winter job, and you can start doing that reasonably. I mean, not when the beds are really, really wet, because you don't want to walk on them, because you'll just compact the soil and make it all worse. But that's actually a really good thing to start doing. So start getting your sticks together, start gathering it. So, you know, it's like good King Wenceslas looking out. When the frost was, you know, all the snow was deep and crisp and even, that's it. The poor man gathering winter fuel. You're gathering winter sticks in order to stake your plants, you know. So instead of disappearing to go and sharpen your trowel, go and gather some sticks and start thinking about which plants will need supporting.
And you mentioned right at the beginning that, you know, we used to just cut everything to the ground at the start of winter and sort of lock the doors and that was it. How much do you think, winter in the garden has changed over the last 30 years as the climate changes? And
Quite a lot. I mean, climate change is unpredictable in that we never know. You know, we have very cold winter. This winter we may have a warm winter next winter. And we say, oh, that, what do we have to worry about? You don't know. It's because you don't understand. You don't know what's going on. And it's the fact that climate is different from weather and, you know, all, and it's affecting the whole world rather than just your
garden.
Winters, most winters are warmer than they used to be. Some of them are wetter, some of them are colder. You can't tell. And what you have to do, us as gardeners, we're not entirely in control of that. Yes, we're in control of what we grow, but we're not in control of how it grows. We can do our best, but sometimes it's not the right thing, and sometimes it's not good enough, sometimes it's too good, you know, all of that kind of stuff. You just have to be ready. You have to be adaptable, I think, probably is what it is. And you know, it may be a cold winter, it may be a warm winter, it may be a wet winter, maybe a dry winter, maybe a windy winter, maybe a non-windy winter, whatever the opposite of windy is. Still winter.
Still
winter, yeah, you see. So you don't really, things are always change. We don't know. Nobody can predict it, you know. You can be the greatest weather forecaster in the world, but you're not going to get it right all the time, every time. So what we do as gardeners is that we roll with it. Were heavyweight boxers to a certain extent, or lightweight boxers, or featherweight boxers, or, you know, whichever weight boxers we are. And when we get punched on one side, we just roll with it and we adapt and we come back and we do something else. It's like, you know, when you lose all your cuttings because you haven't put them in the right place for the winter, then you think, okay, fine, we just have to make new ones. And so you just go with it. But yes, I mean, I can remember very, very cold winters. I remember one winter, sometime in the 1980s, being on a bus and my feet were so cold. I can still remember it now. I don't know why. I think probably because I wasn't wearing suitable footwear. I was probably wearing flip-flops or something unnecessary like that in January. Go with it. Winter, basically, is a really important season. We have to have it. It has to be there. It's cleansing, apart from anything else, you know. Is that you have a cold winter, you're going to have fewer pests and diseases the following year because that has happened. It is the only winter we're getting. You can't say, actually, I'm going to change the winter. I'm going to have another one. You just have to go with it. You have to enjoy it where you can. It's like any experience in life. Basically, you wake up, you see what's happening that day. You do it to the best of your ability. You try to go to bed at the end of the day happier than you were when you woke up. And you try and do that every day. And not some days it works, and some days you go to bed miserable. Basically, what you have to try and do is try and enjoy it as much as any other season, but it's in a different way.
Smaller, but more intense.
Smaller, but much more. Well, actually, not smaller. It feels considerably longer.
It does.
Much more intense. But there are plants, and there are things, and there are joys in the garden that you can still get, no matter what the weather throws at you, no matter what the winter throws at you. There will still always be things. There will always be, it's like we discussed, there will always be intense scents. There will be waving grasses. There will be little animal burrows. There will be leaf mold. There will be compost. There will be bulbs aplenty. And we have to plant the damn things to do anything about it. So plant, that's part of the first part of your winter is taking up planting bulbs. It's that whole thing. And I challenge you, I bet you, Catherine, how many bulbs do you buy every year? Okay, this is a scale. Okay?
Yeah.
Not nearly enough. Just the right amount. Far too many that I'm still planting them in January.
Not nearly enough, and yet I am still planting them in January.
Yeah.
You do that thing of putting off planting them, you know, particularly tulips. I don't want to put them in the ground too early. I want to leave it until it's got really cold and so I don't spread tulip fire. And then, of course, that the cold weather comes and it's wet and I'm busy and I don't want to go out there in the pouring rain. And
yeah.
And my garden's in London, so actually a lot of my perennials keep their shape, don't die back until really late. So it's really, really late in winter before I can actually see the bare soil to get stuff in the ground. So yes, not nearly enough bulbs. Every spring I think, why didn't I plant more bulbs? And yet, more than I managed to plant.
It's a sort of combination of not nearly enough, but at the same time, far too many. Ready. And everybody does that. Because there is a few things more seductive than a bulb catalogue.
Oh. More know, so think. than a spring or summer flower catalogue, definitely.
Much more, because you're sitting there and you're looking at it and you know that you're coming into winter. And so you're there and there's this box of stuff around because you've looked at this thing. You think, oh, yeah, 100 of those. And they'd fit in there, that problem at all. And you think, oh, well, why not 200?
And, there's usually a 3 for 2 or something.
Yeah,
somewhere.
There's a deal. You've got to have a deal. You know, the garden as well, like the devil upon your shoulder. Saying, oh, look here. James, come and look at this book here. If you buy 10 of those, we're going to give you 5 free. But so we might as well buy 1,000. all of that. And then, all of this stuff.
You don't even like yellow, but you're
exactly
bound to like
it. It doesn't
this.
Matter. You get a free one. You're going to, oh, yes, I'm going to love it. You know, Catherine says, I must have that. And it arrives, and they're quite innocuous. And they're just, you know, a bag of sort of things that look like onions, basically. You think, okay, that's easy. I can plant those. And suddenly you realise that you've actually got to dig 500 holes.
500 really deep holes.
And yeah, get them as deep as you possibly can. Do you know the secret to planting 500 bulbs?
No. Rotavator?
No, it's an auger.
Oh.
An auger.
I think I know what this is, but tell me more.
An auger is a machine that drills a hole. And so you put it in your cordless drill.
It's like a giant corkscrew.
It's like a giant corkscrew, exactly what it is. And you go along and you make as many holes as you can, which is actually a bit of a game changer. Rather than digging individual holes with a trowel. I mean, it's either that or else you get a spade and you dig a massive great hole, which is difficult in a border.
It is.
Because you're going to dig up all the other stuff and you haven't got room and your things haven't died down again because you're living in some soft southern place. You know, all
sheltered
of this sort of stuff is happening. So the auger is actually quite, and you get a short one and a long one, and then you just kind of drill all these holes, boom, 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 boom. But even with that, digging 500 holes, finding a place for 100, 500, however many holes there are. So that occupies the first part of your winter. And then you need a bit of a lie down. And then it's Christmas when you have to cope with your, you know, your family. And then there's this bit in between Christmas and New Year that's generally just depressing. And then there's New Year, which is ghastly. It is New Year. Come on. When was the last time you had a fun New Year's Eve?
Oh, no, it's awful.
It's always dreadful. It's New Year's Eve. It's going to be party time. And I'm sitting there thinking, God, it's 9:30. I want to go to bed. So now I just do. I refuse all invitations and I don't do anything at all and go to bed shamelessly at 10 o'clock as if it was a normal day without having to see. Because you get to this thing. I remember it when I was younger and you think, God, it's going to be really exciting. It's going to be wonderful. And you get to this thing and it's 11:45. Yeah, let's all line up. Let's have another drink. And it's 11:55. Oh, it's going bong, 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 bong. And it's Jules Holland, actually. Probably even Moira Anderson in there. Those days, I don't know whoever it was. There was always a sort of Scottish person in a kilt, I remember in my deep youth, who would skip about at this sort of time. And then it's 12:00 and everybody goes, Happy New Year. And then you think, what do we do now?
Oh, can we go home now?
Yeah, that's it. We've had enough of this. So anyway, that's a digression. We go on and then we've got to New Year and now it's January and it's pretty miserable. And January has 69 days in it, or it feels 69 days in it. And that's when you go for a nice walk and you enjoy the fact that the weather is happening, and you keep a lookout for the beginning of snowdrops and the beginning of your bulbs, and then you're nearly there, sort of.
And if you could just have one plant to look at all winter, what would it be?
Oh God, that's such a horrible thing
to
say.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I mean, the other thing about winter is you know, you have indoor plants.
Yes.
You have about which I know very little. So don't start asking me about exotic indoor plants. But you know there are things that will make your winter happier. So you know, amaryllis and hippiastrums and all those kind of things will make it lovely. Poinsettias, if you insist.
Yeah, if you have to.
They make excellent compost. So the one plant, it has to be a snowdrop, doesn't it? Really, it has to be a snowdrop because it has this. It just carries so much with it. I mean, a snowdrop. I'm not one of these people who spend a lot of January and February on their knees looking up snowdrops or walking along with a mirror to see the inside of snowdrops. I don't quite get that obsession with it. But what I like is you know, a hillside, a wooded hillside covered in snowdrops, naturalized snowdrops. So you know have just done this thing over God knows how many decades. And they've just started maybe with one bulb and then there's two and then there's four. It's like that sort of doubling of grains of rice on the chessboard thing. And it's exponential growth. And it's been there for a couple of centuries. And you know that there were people in periwigs who came and looked at this a couple of hundred years ago and have walked through it and have seen it. And you're seeing it at the best it's ever going to be this year. It's going to be even better next year. You know that's what's going to happen. And there's just this sea of white with these little green details in it. And it's heaven, isn't it? So yeah, I'm sticking with the snowdrop.
Thanks for listening to the BBC Gardeners World magazine podcast. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts and never miss an episode. If you've enjoyed this episode, please tell others about it and rate us in your podcast provider app.